Welcome to Phoneboy Speaks, a short podcast about whatever mobile technology, social media, geek culture, information security, or general tech douchebaggery that happens to be on my mind. In the last episode, I talked about planned obsolescence in terms of, things that you buy, physical things that you buy. But what about software? And this is, and I'm talking about I come from the old days where you bought software in a box. I remember when I bought Wizardry in a box, and I think I still have the manual for it somewhere. It's kind of and there's a game that, I think with some of the stuff that's been going on with PG&E lately in California, so I remember a game called Crush, Crumble, and Chomp, which was a game that it was on many different, computers of the 80s or whatever. And there was an action that you did in the game. There was paralyze, grab, and eat. And so when I see PG&E, that's kind of what I think about. And you do it in that order usually, right? You paralyze the thing that you're trying to get, you grab it, and then you eat it. software, I'd say earlier software, right? There was no dependency on a network or whatever. And so the software just, assuming you had hardware that continued to run that software would pretty much function until the end of, until the computer that it ran on, ran into the ground kind of thing. But now it's a little bit different with software, because a lot of software has dependencies on the network. And so, games, for example, these multiplayer online games, that the experience is these servers, and when the company that ran that game decides that they're done with that game, then you can't play that game anymore. I bet if I still had a copy of Wizardry on a 5 1/4 inch floppy, and I could find an Apple II, I could probably play the game. It'd still work, right? Nothing had really changed that much. Whatever bugs it had obviously would be, it'd still be there and everything. But I was thinking about this as I was as I just loaded the next beta on my iPhone and all of a sudden the app that I relied on for my podcast called Editorial actually started working again, and I figured that was what was going to happen, right? It was going to be there's going to be this process where it goes through and is able to create to solve itself, right? It would just be one of those things that's like, oh, it's a beta thing, and the app still works, right? And this is, it's always a challenge, right? So there's this march, that happens with these connected devices, right? They should be getting up to date on a fairly regular basis. But sometimes when you do that, right, you as a software developer, you work around the bugs of the operating system at the time or whatever, and then as the operating system goes to advances or whatever, it fixes things, but it might break other things too. And so all of a sudden apps that used to work all of a sudden no longer work. Well, you have a phone with a different screen size, for example, that tends to cause some issues. And that's actually an issue with Editorial, is that it doesn't take advantage of the full screen size of the iPhone X that I currently have. And so I figured whatever crash bug that it ran into would probably be sorted out by the time I loaded the next beta, and sure enough it was. Now the good news is that I'll still probably the workflow that I created, I'll still probably use it. It's just I may still refine it, but I like Editorial as an editor too for text. I do wish it I wish it was updated a little bit more, but to leverage the full size of the screen and that kind of thing. We'll see. But yeah, software is, yeah, this is one of those things. And you can look at Microsoft, right? And the quintessential Office suite. Microsoft now sells it as a service, and if you're a software vendor, it makes a lot of sense, because to keep these things up to date and to add new features and fix bugs and that kind of thing, there's a cost to it. And getting like a regular end user to pay for a support contract doesn't, which is kind of how that's funded on the enterprise side, that's a little bit more difficult. But if you sell the software as a subscription, then you can kind of bundle that in there, then it's included. And enterprises have similar sort of licensing arrangements as well. But that means, right, is that if you stop paying your subscription, then the software stops working, and your ability to use it stops working, and there you go. And so it's there's a continual revenue stream for companies, and I understand that on a business side. But as a user, it's like I pay for something, I kind of expect it to continue to work. But also, software developers have to make a living, and so there's this push and pull that you kind of have to think about. So this is, it's the modern software world, I guess. Things will just kind of stop working because you did an upgrade, that's going to happen, and that's unfortunate. If I had an old Apple II or one of those old Fat Macs or whatever that had, and play some of those old games that are out there, I could still play those games. They'd still work, even though they're, but good luck finding modern hardware. And there's a whole it seems industry of resurrecting the old classics or whatever, what they call abandonware. So companies have went out of business that sold these software packages, and it's like, okay, well, you can't get them anymore. And there's quite a lot of history there too. I mean, and, they're protected by copyright and all that stuff, but I mean, the reality is that the people that own the copyright don't exist anymore in some cases. And so what's the harm in making this stuff available or preserving it? I mean, this is what the Internet Archive's done a really good job of, is trying to preserve a lot of this stuff. And there's other places as well. I think there's like Good Old Games that'll sell copies of some of these older games that have been out of print for a long time. They might do a little bit of work to make it run on modern computer operating systems or whatever, but But yeah, there's a whole industry around this, and we are in danger with a lot of this stuff. Of, you know, the more we digitize stuff, the more we run the risk of essentially losing our history, right? And this, you know, and it's, there's a whole lot of history. I mean, I remember like my stepfather had, he had an Apple III. I don't know if you ever heard of an Apple III. I think it ran some sort of CPM type operating system, as I recall. And yeah, CPM is another great example, right? And you know, a lot of our modern, you look at some of the modern computing stuff, you can really get into this, you find some interesting history about how this stuff was developed and what, you know, in the path it took and how we got to where we're at in the, you know, modern computing. And a lot of that history is, putting hardware and the stuff that was stored on the disks of the time, right? You know, some of that stuff might not be good. I mean, I got stuff I had from a Macintosh, you know, from 20 something, almost 30 years ago now. And good luck if I can find something that can actually read that disk. Find the programs or whatever. I mean, I've read a lot of stuff and I'm sure it's all like lost to the sands of time now because I can't find something that can read the disk, much less the, read the data on it in a format that makes any sort of sense. So yeah, we're in danger with some of the stuff of losing our history. We don't, because it's so ephemeral. A lot of the stuff we didn't think about like long-term storage of it. And you know, how important is some of the stuff? Well, maybe not that important. It's important to somebody, I'm sure. But just knowing the old saying is if you don't know your history, you're doomed to repeat it, kind of thing. I think it's important to preserve some of the stuff because it's a point in time where we were developing, you know, and we're developing stuff, and I think it's important that we preserve some of it. And there's great organizations that are trying to do that. I think we're gonna lose a lot of stuff. And also some of the stuff that we paid for. You know, this is why digital rights management on music is such a horrible idea. I'm glad I didn't buy any of my stuff with DRM on it. I still have CDs for a lot of stuff, and the things I don't, they're unprotected MP3s, and hopefully something will still be able to read them in 50 years or whatever. Unlike a vinyl disc, somebody can still play that today. I don't want to lose sight of the history. I don't want to lose the history. And you know, this whole software, you know, I know I got onto this kind of train of thought from based on like software stops working after a while, or hardware stops working after a while, or we stop updating it. Well, yeah, but the stuff still has a useful life, and it still is. You know, from a historical perspective, it's important to preserve it. And we probably need to figure out with all these technologies that we're creating, we're moving so fast that I don't think we're necessarily thinking about preserving any of this stuff, because it matters to have that and be able to show like the progression of how things happened. And so, you know, hopefully people don't make the same mistakes again, which you look at the world, it seems like we're repeating a lot of the same mistakes. So we could probably use a little bit more history, a little bit more knowledge of history. From more people, and hopefully that would resolve that. But maybe I'm too optimistic that would be the case.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Phoneboy Speaks. Visit phoneboy.com/PS on the web for more information.